Blog Talk Radio.
Pretty much explains
do with this book, and it's about 4 pages, and hopefully we can get to that. And I wanted to read the first chapter, which is The World of Many Dimensions, and possibly get into a couple other things. The book is not a very long book. It's about 160 pages or so, but it's very, very involved with a lot of a lot of metaphysical aspects that we may not be aware of, or I mean, you may not be aware of. I am, because I've read some of this book and talked about this for so many years. I studied it. But I thought it was a very good intro, and I thought it was a very good way to get on with this, you know. So I'm hoping that hoping we can do that. I'll begin with the introduction. We are living at a time that is not only unique in human history, it is unique in the history of the entire universe. As far as anyone knows, we are accelerating in our evolution at such a rate that we have drawn the attention of beings from every part of the cosmos, because what's happening to us will affect all life everywhere, and no one knows for sure what will happen to us. The changes that are taking place are obvious to everyone, even on our ordinary dimensional level. Technology is developing so rapidly that the scientists themselves cannot keep up with it. Knowledge in the form of a new data about the universe is accumulating so fast from our radio telescopes and satellites and space probes that even NASA is already years behind in assimilating and integrating and interpreting it. At the same time, because of ultra-high-speed computers, theoreticians are able to generate theories at a rate so fast that there is no time or possibility of inventing experiments to test them. Is this for the good, or are we headed for disaster? Is there a prescripted scenario for our fate that has determined how it will all turn out? Or is it somehow up to us, or up to chance? We know that our entire planet is being threatened by developments on what seems to be every level. The population continues to grow at a rate that makes it certain that very soon the Earth will not be able to sustain. And scientists in the European community are already predicting that within 10 years, now he wrote this in 2001, that within 10 years, there will not be enough fresh water for the population to drink. So that prediction was wrong, okay, by the scientists, but it's getting there. And the efforts of countries like China to ensure that it will be able to feed its people are in themselves threatening the environment. Throughout the world, efforts to expand industrially so that underdeveloped peoples will be able to participate in the global economy are at the same time destroying local agriculture, causing vast disruptions in local ways of life, and virtually enslaving local populations. The world has become one world through electronic communications and ever more convenient jet transport. But the process itself is threatening in the very existence of life on Earth. At the same time, predictions about enormous improvements in our life are almost as common as reasons for apprehensions of disaster. The genetic code has been deciphered, and the entire genetic content of the human species, the human genome, is all but completely understood. This, we are told, will bring enormous possibilities for curing and preventing cancer and other diseases. Advances in solar energy and other ways of tapping into the limitless supply of energy in the cosmos are just around the corner. process of aging itself is close to being understood. We are told that within a decade, human life expectancy may be 100. Well, you know, again, I have to laugh in a way because these predictions are so optimistic, but they were from 2001. I mean, we're not. No one's living. In fact, the age is age in most countries is falling. Age, life expectancy is grim due to pollution and cancer and chemtrails and genetically modified foods and pollution killing people off right and left. So, getting past the hyperbole of this guy's predictions, which didn't pass the decade, there. I mean, certain things are coming through, but you know they're not here yet, and there's only sparse talk of it, you know, as far as water shortages and so on and so forth. But at the same time, changes in the condition of the Earth itself and in the solar system seem to be threatening life on Earth. Geologists know that both the axis of the Earth and the magnetic poles are due for a shift at any time. And this is interesting because we are going through that right now. And an enormous solar explosion on the Sun in 1972, in fact, would have destroyed all life on Earth if it had not been for the concern and intervention of the Sirians. Now, the Sirians are from the planet, from the Sirian planet. And being from other stellar world who are intimately connected with our fate. Now, of course, this is that is a great leap of faith here in this, you know, in this book, you know, to go from, you know, this to suddenly to alien origins is in one paragraph is kind of strange, but we'll go on from there. These historical and natural changes are just the external aspects of changes that are occurring in our very makeup as conscious beings. We are in the process of an accelerated spiritual evolution that is unprecedented in the known universe. Ancient prophecies and astrological theory together agree that we are living in a moment of great transition and change. But the rate of change that is occurring is something that has never been known before and was not anticipated by our most prescient sages. The old world is dying and crying out to be saved. A new world is emerging, and we are all being drawn into it. This new world offers incredible possibilities, a shift in the very nature of our consciousness and of the dimensional structures of the region of the world in which we live, a promise of ascension to a way of being where all the old conflicts melt away and where harmony, love, joy are the constant basis of our existence. But the passage to this new world seems fraught with struggle and disorientation. It doesn't seem that we are very well prepared to make this shift. Incompletions from our past, incomplete emotions, intentions, and personal histories lie dormant within us, and if they are not dealt with by each one of us, we will resist the coming changes. Resistance will cause us great suffering and prevent us from embracing the possibilities that are open to us. The main message of this book is that we create reality itself unerringly, and that the way we experience the changes that are occurring in us and around us depend entirely upon our own beliefs and, the most importantly, on our own intention. We can resist change and create a context for our lives in which we are helpless victims, where we are at the effect of every seemingly external event that comes our way. Or we can shift our identity through an awareness of the unity of being and declare that we are spiritual masters with the power to create our own context of unity and harmony. Everything depends upon the purity of our intention. Our ability to intend this shift of identity without hesitation and second thoughts and get down to the business of integrating our incompletions from the past. The basis for this shift in identity is not anything like a fact that can be demonstrated by external evidence. It is a possibility that you have to grasp intuitively that we are right now and have been from the very beginning a spiritual being who has chosen to be here on Earth at this time to be part of the process of the evolution of the planet. You may not be able to remember this choice, but by reading this book and by working with the exercises that I have already presented, and nothing in this book is true, which is another book he has, but it's exactly how you how things are, and something in this book is true, you'll be able to intuit what it means that you are a spiritual being having a human experience. In this book, I want to present a picture of what the factors are in the transition that the planet as we and we as inhabitants of it are all going through, and how we are all very active players in what is happening. In a very real sense, we are coming into a world that we ourselves are creating with our thoughts and our intentions. Though it is a universal law that we create our world with our consciousness, in the new conditions that are presently in formation, the immediacy of this connection between thought and reality will become incredibly clear. So will the intimacy of our connection with all life everywhere and our responsibility for creating the context for existence itself. In the first part of the book, I will expand and hopefully deepen the ideas behind some of the themes I struck in my other books. The dimensional structure of the cosmos, the unity of being, the nature of polarity. In the second section, I want to go into the psychological and personal side of the evolution of consciousness, just how one's individual work, the release of incompletions from the past, and a shift of identity from being a victim to being a spiritual master, are the keys not only to our own growth, but to the evolution of the planet. In the third section, I will go into what we know and what we do not know about our present moment in the history of the planet. The galaxy. Oh, my God. I think I'm still streaming here. I'm sorry. I cut out my computer by accident, and I'm hoping I'm still on. But my computer just crashed. But I'm hoping that that the program is still going. If you bear with me 1 minute here, I'm going to try to reconnect with the computer. I'm driving blind here is what's going on. My telephone says that I still have that I'm still activated, but just hold on for 1 minute, please. And good Lord. something that always bothered me about technology is that everything could be lost with just the click of a button, you know, or a switch, or the loss of power. You know, it's like, my God, years of work or, you know, can be deleted, you know, by mistake or things like that. And it's quite frightening, actually. I find it to be. And I think it's important to remember, too, that, I mean, you know, the fascinating thing is, like you said, we're moving so quickly, we're moving so fast, that in technology, I mean, 10 years ago, we're operating with a Pentium 1, you know, running two programs at a time was like, you know, unheard of, you know, so, it was unbelievable. So, yes, we're still on, which is great. And I got back to my thing, and I'm sorry to have interrupted. She talks about let me continue where I left off. I want to go into the psychological and personal side of evolution of consciousness, just how one's individual work, the release of incompletions from the past, the shift of identity from being a victim to being a spiritual master. I know I read this, but I'm repeating it here, are the keys not only to our own growth, but to the evolution of the planet. In the third section, I will go into what we know and what we do not know about our present moment in history, of the planet, the galaxy, and being itself. Particularly in this third section, I am not going to give definitive answers of all questions I raise, but I will show how each of us can orient ourselves in these troublesome and exciting times, in spite of the fact that things have come to so unique a pass that not even the Ascended Masters and the Melchizedeks are positive about what is going on. It was the best time and the worst time, wrote Charles Dickens, about the years of the French Revolution. It seems that there is a cosmic law at play, and where there is great hope, there is also great danger. That where we seem on the brink of disaster, unimagined benefit may lie just around the corner. And part one of this book is called Unity of Being. And we'll begin reading that with, it's called A World of Many Dimensions. The universe as a whole comprises an enormous number of levels or dimensions of being, each dimension possessing its own kind of reality, and each being an expression of a different kind of consciousness. Dimensions overlap. We are living on the third dimension. But right now, all the other dimensions of the planet Earth exist simultaneously, interpenetrating each other, as if in the same place, each higher dimension including and adding a new perspective on the phenomena that appear on the ones below. The third dimension, which we inhabit, is the lowest level on which consciousness can take the form of intelligent, responsible life. Now our present-day human life is not only in the third dimension, we are also living on the second level of consciousness. I will explain the differences, the different levels of consciousness in a little while, but the second level of consciousness is a realm in which an awareness of unity of being, the interconnectedness of all of life on all dimensions, is missing. We do not see it or know it or feel it, except at rare moments or in special states of consciousness. We perceive a world of separated things and beings. We perceive a dualistic world, a world that is divided, polarized, between things and events that appear to be good and those that appear to be evil. And we perceive a world that is thoroughly trapped in a kind of time in which things appear to exist for a while and then pass away into oblivion. I will have a lot more to say about the unity of being and the view that transcends duality and about the nature of time as we know as we go on. Each dimension of being is organized energetically by a single waveform, a single vibration that assembles and maintains the appearance of reality for all the beings who live on that dimension. In truth, that waveform is itself generating all those beings. It is the characteristic vibration of their mindset, and it gives the baseline sense of what they would think is real. All we have to do to change our dimensional level is to change the baseline vibration, or what amounts to the same thing, to become aware of other higher frequencies, the frequency of the other dimensions. Now, he explains this a little more, and it's like a musical scale, but I wanted to relate an experience that I had that brings this home to me more so than anything. We all have experiences that we would, times that, that we were either in a place or at some place or doing something, or maybe we had a home that we moved away from, or a town that we moved away from, or friends that we no longer see, or relationships we no longer have. Number of years ago, this dawned on me, and I've never been able to really look at anything the same way that I did then. But everything, once you leave a place, never to return, that place no longer has, it has lesser and lesser and less meaning to your lives. Unless you, go back and visit them, or, go see this place every time, or have pictures in your mind, you're extremely attached to it. But being a Taurian, I understand my nature a little better, I'm attracted to places, and it's fixed. I'm a fixed sign. I'm an earth sign. So I have a tendency to, when I create a place in my mind where I live or where I work or where I, place that I do, I have a tendency to be fixed to that place. But there are reasons, like everyone, that they move on. You move on. And I have memories of places, and slight memories, but they fade over time. And they fade drastically over time to the point where I barely remember them. And yet at the time that I was living there, or the time I was experiencing this stuff, is extremely intense. And, extremely vivid. And in my mind, but whether or not I was creating that, or it was created for me, I don't know. All I know is that I created. It's like when I built a house, it all came from my mind, and then it was put down in plans, and then it was, the land was bought, and the builder, the contractors were hired, and all of this. But everybody saw the plan and saw this thing coming to fruition. And each step of the way, having the money, creating, getting the mortgage, getting the developers, getting the this, the that, was all an integral part of creating something. Now, I haven't been to that house in, what, almost not 20 years, but probably 15 years or more. But I remember it, but I know that it no longer, I'm sure it doesn't look the way it did when I was there. Nor do I expect it. And whether or not the house still exists, I don't know. I haven't been back there in so many years, it's irrelevant. But a strange thing happens when you leave a place, and these things go away when nobody, when there's no longer a thought to your to what you did, to your historical thing, whatever you created. It no longer exists for you in your mind, and so you kind of move to another reality. And I believe that experience, those experiences of friends or relationships or marriages or, family, things like that, you can leave them, and you suddenly transcend to a different reality altogether. And that you even wonder what it was like back then. You can't even remember. Or you do remember. You remember the things that made you separate from that and free from a situation or people or places or whatever. Or perhaps you were forced out or, who knows. But these memories soon fade. And the more painful they are, the more you regress and the more you want them out of your mind. You don't want to remember them. So what happens is you are forced to, or voluntarily, leave those memories behind, rather than continually live in them and dwell in them, and you move on. And in each dimension of being, I'm reading this here now, each dimension of being is organized energetically by a single wave form. A single vibration that assembles and maintains the appearance of reality for all the beings who live in that dimension. In truth, the waveform is itself generated by those beings. It is the characteristic vibration of their mindset, and it gives the baseline sense of what they think is real. And that's the fascinating thing. Once you, like for instance, I use the example of building a house because everything is nuts and bolts and foundations and everything, but you have a number, you have maybe up to 50 or to 100 people sometimes involved in building a place, and it's their mind seeing the blueprint, visualizing your dream, visualizing what you saw, and this unity consciousness that develops around it creates this house that you, your dream house or whatever house, or creates this image, this reality, right? Then you further it by moving into the house and enjoying that for whatever it is. But, and then when you leave, either somebody else enjoys that property, or the property, the vision or the reality no longer exists. It burns down or gets bulldozed down or, earthquakes take it or whatever it is, but it's no longer there, all right? And it was just a vision. It was just you wonder, it was just in your mind, and it was. So, in essence, we are always creating where we live and what we do each minute by minute. And, so, in truth, that waveform itself generated by those beings is a characteristic vibration of their mindsets, and it gives the baseline sense of what they think is real. All we can do to change our dimensional level is to change that baseline vibration, or which amounts to the same thing, to become aware of other higher frequencies, the frequencies of the other dimensions. And as you, you know, as you go from this thought to the next, and you hopefully you're raising your consciousness, raising your awareness, raising your goals, okay, to a higher goal, a bigger house, a different place, different jobs, different friends, different whatever it is, you know, changing your reality, okay, constantly, because you're being guided into those, you're evolving into a higher level of consciousness, to where, you know, or, you know, you, the same thing happens where you can devolve, okay, you can go down in the spiral term, you know, where, you know, you lose touch with reality, you lose touch with your goals, and what happens is you spin down and down and down to the point where you're still creating your own reality. However, it can be quite not what you want, you know, not what you expect it to be, because you lost grip, you lost grasp of that vision, and, you know, and you're spiraling down, and you're becoming somebody else's, part of someone else's vision, or part of no one's vision, not even your own. And when you get to that point, then, my friend, you've reached the bottom, right? And, you know, the bottom of the bottle, the bottom of the bag, or the bottom of your life, you know. And, you know, that's where it is. And it's quite sad. Quite sad, actually, to ever get to that far down. But, and to lose grasp of reality is even worse, which you do with liquor, or you do with drugs, or you do with religion, or you do with, you know, some other, you know, mind-numbing metaphor, you know. So, let us go on. The region of the universe to which we belong is organized under a musical scale, like a musical scale. It comprises an octave, or I'm sorry, it comprises an octave in which the highest note repeats at a higher rate of vibration, the basic characteristics of the lowest note. Each note is a dimensional level. And just as the octave includes the 12 notes of the chromatic scale, and the piano, all the white keys and the black keys together, plus a 13th note, that is the first note of the next octave. So there are 12 main dimensional levels in our region of the universe. Now, the musical scale actually includes more than these 12 main tones. There is a continuum of different microtones between any two notes. And you can hear this on an instrument like a violin, where a skillful player can slide continuously between the notes. In the Melchizedek's way of understanding the dimensional structure of our region of the universe, between each of the 12 main notes, there is an additional 12 specific notes, that is 12 important dimensional levels, making 144 levels in all. Melchizedek's call the additional levels just above or below a given dimension the overtones of that dimension. For those of you who are familiar with musical terminology, these should not be confused with the overtones or partials that go to make up the timbre or tone quality of the fundamental tones. But they are like these partials, since, like tone qualities, they do modify or give color to the 12 fundamental levels. The importance of this system of dimensional levels is that it provides a map of our own course of evolution. As we evolve as conscious beings, we ascend to higher and higher dimensional levels. That is, we achieve wider and wider perspectives on our own nature. Each higher level encompassing the lower, as I mentioned, which each step can gain a deeper and wider sense of the unity of being, one spirit that runs through them all. And that's quite an important statement because, you know, understanding unity consciousness is when everyone is basically thinking the same thing at the same time, you know, breaking down the walls of the barriers to common thought. Excuse me. We do that all the time. In fact, television is the best example of that. You know, where millions of people are watching the very same program, all right, and thinking the very same thing and wondering how it's going to end, or admiring or disliking the characters, you know. So, but we're creating that program is put out there on celluloid, but it, you know, and created by whatever. But the success or failure of that program is based primarily upon the if that reality that's being projected is one, or I should say reality, but yeah, the reality of what's being projected on the screen, it, you know, finds a place in the mind and in the heart of the viewer long enough for them to want to be interested and to listen or to watch. And so if they don't, then that reality no longer exists for them, or never did, right? That way, when people say, oh, did you watch this show or that show, or did you hear about this or that, and you say, no, I never did, or I didn't watch it, so you lose the connection with someone if you don't watch Two and a Half Men or know who Charlie Sheen is. You know, it's kind of like, I know it sounds superfluous, and it is. It's very superficial. But at the same time, it brings to mind, it brings to the mass mind, the unity consciousness, a sense of understanding a character over a real life character. You know, making that separation, okay, between you know, the Charlie Harper and the Charlie Sheen characters, and, you know, in Two and a Half Men. I personally very much enjoyed the program Two and a Half Men. I mean, and the characters and what's created there is one great laugh machine. It's really funny to watch. It's the funny bone of Americans, whereas you know, other shows don't. But yet now we see, you know, where the main character, the central character, is coming across, where he wants you to believe, you know, that, I mean, you see his life falling apart. You know, you see him as an addict. You know, you see him a failed marriage, you see him in amoral situations, but yet he's perpetrating those and trying to legitimize his lifestyle by the media. And the media is fueling the flames there for him, okay? And which is the thing they like to do best. So, but the people will ultimately, you and I, who are in a reality state, and not on drugs or not on, you know, you and I could see through it. Or if we have been on drugs, or we have been in rehab, we understand the nature of addiction. I've never been in a rehab, But I've been addicted to cigarettes. I've been addicted to, you know, other things, you know, foods and so on. But, you know, sugar and whatnot. But but at the same time, those addictions always lead to health issues, mental health or physical health issues. And, you know, when we cross over, we're creating a reality, we're crossing over into some other dimension with that others can't relate to. And that is the danger that you have when you're like that, because if you are beyond the comprehension of most people, because you're living an illusion, then you'll have difficulty, you know, with your life, because you can't. Well, in a case like Charlie Sheen, I mean, he knows that drugs and booze and pornography and porn stars made him what he is today, which is the most highly paid actor on television with the most successful sitcom series. So he has created a reality that, you know, for himself, that the rest, and trying to get the rest of the world to accept his reality, you know, join him in his reality, you know. But for most people, they're not millionaires. And for most people who are fighting with drugs or fighting with addictions, know how hard it is. And for most rational human beings watching him, you know, in his real world where he just lost his kids and he's constantly in court and he, is basically falling apart. You have to understand, you have to ask why. And that's because somebody crossed over. That's because they crossed over from a reality to a non-reality, to some unsustainable, I shouldn't say non-reality, but I should say an unsustainable reality, because it takes a toll on your life, on your physical life and mental health, by putting these drugs and liquor into your head, where, you know, in your body, and expect you to be operating normally. It just doesn't work like that. And you know, because normally you will die, you know, if you put poisons in your system. But anyway, let me move on. I've got about 10 minutes left. This time went fast. But the five levels of awareness. When Atlantis fell, the dimensional level of the planet and the inhabitants fell from what must have been the higher overtones of the fourth dimension, where the human species existed with unity consciousness, to the third dimension. The very bottom of the barrel as far as self-conscious life is concerned. But while we fell in dimensional level, this event itself was actually a necessary step in the progressive evolution of planetary consciousness. And here's why. There are five levels of consciousness associated with life. These levels are not the same as the 144 dimensions and overtones of the octave. For instance, it is possible to exist on a higher overtones of fourth dimension and be on the first level of consciousness. This was actually the case with inhabitants of Atlantis and Lemuria. The higher overtones of the fourth dimension are also where we will be when we complete our own evolution to the next dimensional level. Where we are now and where we have been for the past 13,000 years is the second level. Where we are headed is the third level. Now, the first, third, and fifth levels involve different degrees of awareness of the unity of being and are fundamentally in harmony with it, while the second and fourth levels are disharmonic. On the second and fourth levels, there is no awareness of unity. The consequence is that on those levels, life shows all kinds of conflicts and other inharmonious and dysfunctional phenomena. The second and fourth levels, however, are necessary as steps, stepping stones in order to evolve from the first to the third or from the third to the fifth levels. The first level, in other words, in an evolutionary term, is a more primitive mode of conscious than our own. Excuse me. Even though people on that level experience a form of unity consciousness, and we do not, and even though the Atlantean world was a world in the fourth dimension, on the third level, we will experience unity consciousness of a higher, more fully evolved form. There is a very near and clear explanation of just why these levels have the properties they do, which I present in the Flower of Life workshops. It is based on sacred geometry and the logic that lies behind it. The important point for our purpose is that the inhabitants of Atlantis were on the first level. Where we are now is the second level. And where we are going is the third level. The beings on the third levels are differentiated by physical height, by the number of chromosomes. The genetic material in the cells are made up of and in the kind of memory that they have, i.e. in the way that they have access to the past. For instance, the height range for the first level was 3 to 5 feet. Well, on the third level, it will be 10 to 16 feet. I went into the exact differences in the chromosomic numbers in Nothing, which was his book, Nothing. And if you are interested, you can find out the details there. The type of memory available to the first level is called dreamtime memory. And the present-day Australian aborigines, who never mutated from the first level to the second, perhaps, because they never developed writing, know of a mode of being that they call Alturinga, which in fact means the dream time. And from their point of view, the dream time is the very basis of reality. Fundamentally, a dream time memory, people are able to recreate anything that has happened in the past holographically. For example, if a tribal meeting were held yesterday, and if the Aboriginal had been present at that meeting, he or she would recreate the entire scene holographically, including everything that was said and everything that was done. Pretty much like the holodeck in Star Trek. If someone else were to step into the recreated scene, they would be able to relive very every moment of it. Now, on the third level of consciousness, we will have what is called real-time memory. With real-time memory, whatever you think is real manifests as such immediately. Reality is instantaneously a function or a product of a thought or a feeling. You think it, and bingo, it appears as a real thing in front of you. If you think of yesterday's meeting, and you won't be recreating a holographic replica of it, you will actually be there. Past and present and future are all available in this way, because in a sense, they are all happening at once. Time itself is not a straight line. It is as it seems to be on our second level, but it is more like a sphere. So this kind of access to the past is part of a higher level of consciousness as compared to the dream time of the first level. The first level with its dream time is a form of unity consciousness, but a lower form in the third level. It is possible to be on one of the higher overtones of the fourth dimension, where unity consciousness manifests as the dream time of the first level of consciousness. On the second level of consciousness, We have to rely on our rather weak personal memories and the various technical aids we have invented to enhance it. As a matter of fact, it was the invention of writing itself that cinched the passage for the first to the second level. From dreamtime memory to the weak memories of our present level of consciousness. Apparently, traces of dreamtime survived well into the present era. During the very early days of the civilization of Egypt, about 5,000 years ago, an ascended master, who was known in Egypt as the god Thoth, T-H-O-T-H, introduced writing for the first time, and of once and for all, throwing the human race out of the dream time. And I could go on, but I'm not. I could go on to the next page, but I don't think I have time. Getting into the Melchizedek, but the concept that I'm trying to this concept is quite profound. And the Melchizedeks were those of similar to Enoch, who actually dwelled with God, dwelled with the highest creation in the 144th overtone. And they created a pathway to God, to that highest level, and have come back, okay, to Earth to help create this transformation, to help aid us in the with their words, okay, and with their wisdom, and try to aid humanity in its evolutionary ascension, which is now. The time is now. Okay. The time is in the next few days, weeks, year, within the next year, according to the Mayan calendars and according to the works of Melchizedek and others. John Below Melchizedek. But the words haven't seemed to cut on yet. And not enough people are listening to us. So tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell everyone you can about this show that just tried to inform you of you are a spiritual being having a human existence. And that's a book by Bob Frizzell, F-R-I-S-S-E-L-L. You can check that out. I'm sure it's on. It's probably on Amazon somewhere. So I wish you a pleasant evening. It's the show's got 5 seconds remaining, and I hope you enjoyed it. And join us tomorrow when we have George Dixon.